The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
We have made it to start. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting for 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to our Friday morning California time space show program. I am your host, David Livingston. Thank you very much for tuning in. We have a very, very full program today with two terrific speakers. One is a repeat speaker on the space show. More about that in just a minute. So let me run through our announcements and let's get started. For those of you who would like to call us on our toll-free line, and this is the preferred way of communicating with us, it is 1-866-687-7223. So do remember, there are no call screeners. Let the phone ring, and I'll answer it and bring you up on air as quickly as possible. I also answer the phone during the break, and we often sometimes even skip a break if we've got a caller or a good theme going. So don't let an upcoming break stop you from using our toll-free phone number, which again is 1-866-687-7223. You can also use email, drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And you can also use the Space Show blog. To do that, you go to our website, thespaceshow.com. All the way over on the far right is upcoming shows. It's a menu item on the far right side. We're the first page listed. So you open that up. That's also our archive page for this show. And as you can with all archive blog pages, scroll down to the bottom and you will see where you can comment. And as soon as you post your comment or question, I'll get a copy of it and can bring it up on air at the appropriate time during our live program. So again, 1-866-687-7223 for our toll-free line. And Dr. Space, D-R-S-P-A-C-E. At thespaceshow.com for email. And while you're at our website, do note our website newsletter. You can't miss it. It's center right on the homepage. And it will be uploaded fresh for the week on Sunday, after the Sunday Space Show program. Everything we do is archived, so you can easily download shows very quickly, by the way, or you can listen right off of our website. We do have a upper left menu as well, and under support, there is a store. So if you're interested in our logo wear, t-shirts, and things like that, you'll see Cafe Press under support. There is also another menu item, a very important one that you should share with your friends, Listen Live. So this tells you how to listen to a live space show program, the MP3 archive programs on our website, the podcasting programs on your devices, and the different podcasting servers. And then also for those of you using Amazon's Alexa, TuneIn is embedded on the website, and you can use Alexa right there off of our website. To me, the most important buttons on the website are also on the homepage, center right, and they deal with supporting the Space Show. So remember, we're a 501c3 nonprofit with one, O-N-E, GiantLeapFoundation.org, and we are a listener-supported program. So if you like what we do, please do support us, because without your support, we would not be doing these shows. So remember, as a U.S. federal taxpayer, you do get a tax deduction, as we are a 501c3 nonprofit. And for California folks, or people paying California taxes, we're a public benefit corporation. So you also achieve a tax deduction in California as well. Check out our parent nonprofit, which is 1-O-N-E-GiantLeapFoundation.org. And if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. Do remember also we're trademarked and copyrighted, and you are certainly free to download our programs, share them, and pass the word around about the space show and our content. And there are only a couple of rules with that. So one is don't do anything commercial with our programs. And number two is don't edit or take clips or cuts of our programs, put them up on any website, including YouTube or your own site. And written transcripts are not permitted at this time. And you'll see our full copyright statement at the bottom of every one of our spaceshow.com website pages and onegiantleapfoundation.org website pages. And in addition, we podcast. Gigadial.net is our podcasting client. Again, if you have any podcasting issues, I'll do my best to help you. Email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. And then real quickly, we do have sponsors to the Space Show, and they get a banner ad running across our homepage, which they can change whenever they want. You'll see those banner ads right now going across the page. And I usually read short sponsor messages on full-length programs, which is the type of program we're doing today. So I do want to comment that the National Space Society, ISDC, has their big event in Los Angeles, May 24th to the 27th. You can find out a lot more about it at nss.org. And then the Space Settlement, the Space Development Network is asking if you would like to see space settlement occur in your lifetime. The network is an online organization that allows you, the advocate, to join together with many others to plan space development. And they need people with a wide variety of interest and skills. The network is free to join, so check it out at spacedevelopment.org. The Space Foundation is our sponsor. They just completed another very successful space symposium, their 34th. You'll be able to see a lot of the programs online from that event. We will have guests on the show talking about it. Their website is spacesymposium.org. And then in addition, for the first segment, the Integrated Space Plan is a sponsor, and this is the highly development flowchart that shows the path to becoming spacefaring and the technologies and destinations that build upon one another to make all of this possible. Check it out at thespaceplan.com. You can buy your own version of it. Comes in two different kinds, an academic or the regular kind. Very inspiring. You can frame it. You can hang it on your wall. If you have children, it's a great way to introduce them to the comprehensive space industry. And if you have any questions about any of this, do let me know. And then today we have two guests with us, and we're going to start out with Jose Ocasio-Christian, who is the board chair and the CEO of Calius Foundation and Calius Partners. And that, in case I'm mispronouncing it, it's spelled C-A-E-L-U-S. So Jose will lead us off. He has been a guest before, and I urge you to read his full bio, which is on our website. I'm going to save some time by not reading his or the other guest's bio, but do check it out. As I said, it's already posted up on our website. And then following Jose, probably later in the second segment, we're honored to have for the first time To Tran Nguyen, and she is the executive director of Calius Foundation. And not only does she have a lot to say, but she has really interesting research and stories to tell, because guess what, people? She didn't come to this by being a space cadet. So you've got to hear what she has to say about space and its impact on her, because that's the impact of space on the general public, on different countries of the world, and on why many of us listening to the space show and in the industry do what we want to do. And her full bio is up on the website as well, so you will be able to read about her in detail. Jose, welcome back to the Space Show. How are you today?
David, thank you for having me back, and hello to your great audience.
Thank you very much. So you were on near the end of the year, I think early December of 2017. You had a full agenda back then. Where are you today? You're about, 5 months later, something like that. How are you doing in accomplishing your timeline, your objectives? What are your updates and news stories?
Yeah. So David, as I get started, I want to take a second, as always, my shows and the information we put out from Kalis Partners or the foundation you're going to hear today. We work to be transparent as possible, and we are family focused. So we dedicate this to my wife and the CFO, the boss, Kelsey. She's the boss of our company, and she's done incredible decision making for us over the past 5 to 6 months, which we're going to talk a little bit about. And to my two kids, Ruck and Kaylin, who keep me busy every day and make life interesting. And it's their energy that helps, and the family energy that we have in our company that helps us move. As you know, we just came out, David came out of the Space Foundation, and I will always, you know, I'm indebted to those guys, to that incredible team. Because, again, and I urge everybody who's an audience listener, get to know the foundations in the space domain. Secure World Foundation, Space Foundation, and also Space Frontier, and all those foundations, I'd ask you to go reach out to them, because they really do help if you know the right questions to ask. And in terms of Kalis, we've gone from 0 to 100 in a very short time. But so I want to say a thank you to them right off Jump Street. But to answer your question, so the last show, for those of you that were listening or didn't, give you a quick background on who we are and what we do. We do consulting, financing, and investing in the space domain. And that is consulting on both sides, either the investor or the entrepreneur or company. Do not see this as just startups. We work on everything from startups, prime, what we call contracting primes. We work with governments. We work with family offices. The investor side is anybody who's looking to provide a resource. And then on the entrepreneur side, it's anybody that is willing to receive a resource. So that there could be a prime resourcer and a prime looking for resources as well. And what we do essentially is build a strategy financially along the geopolitical nation-state competition, financing structures that exist, as well as the regulatory situation for that deal. And essentially, once we provide a consult and look at a 7-10 year flow outflow, we'll then, with our partners, structure the financing and then get it invested, because we'll be able to identify the right profile of investment for that deal. And unfortunately, in our industry, as you know, there is a very heavy leaning towards venture capitalists, and in fact, that is a very good source for capital. But there are many, many others that are not normally tapped by the space industry. So our job is to help connect all of that. And of course, the investing part is, if we are working on a major business deal, we will find a way to invest to be able to gain from it as well. So we'll put our own skin in the game. It's not just set up something up and walk away. We stick with the with our clients. So when we did the last show, we talked about community and space. We are continuing our day job on consulting. That's going quite well. But since I saw you in December, we've been on a tear, been very, very busy. We were trying to grow the team. We were raising money for a particular community and space project. And at the same time, we were collecting all the data and all the understanding from all our trips globally that I briefed on the last show. And, so you can imagine, we were a team of 8. Ironically, in the last show, I told you we were going to grow. The fact is, we did not need to. We stayed at 8. So the magic number is 8 in the team. And we continue to outsource, as we've done the last 2 years, all technical support or specialty support to the company. But it's a pretty interesting story how this went down, and I want to share it with the audience, because these are the play-by-play things that maybe some folks that like engineering or want to build a widget don't ever experience, but these are really critical moments in any company. But we were in the middle of the race, and instead of taking the money that we were about to take, we suspended and decided and suspended it because there was a much better opportunity down the line that we were working on as a result of community and space. So instead of putting money in the kitty and have a set of friction points legally, financially, because the more people you bring, the complex the problems of human relationships grow, the complexity of delivery becomes. So our CFO did an awesome job of having a vision in terms of the financial side internal to us to say, look, we have a much bigger play here over the next 6 to 7 months. We don't necessarily need it, so we're gonna hold our investors fast. And we did that, and they thanked us for it, and we showed them the kind of value system we have, which, again, it goes back to that first show we discussed. And in terms of growing the team, the values that go with Kalos in terms of having, and we talked about this, and it sounds silly, but to have unconditional faith that the work we're going to do is going to happen, and then have trust in each other that regardless of qualifications, the task will be done. You would think that those two things you could find anywhere on anybody who's an enthusiast or has been in the industry for a number of years to come in. The fact is that it is incredibly difficult, and that is applicable not to this industry, but to any industry when you're pursuing something global. It takes a character of an individual to be in Kalos, to be working with us, because you're going to have to be transparent. It's not about you, just like it's not about Kalos, it's not about me or Kelsey or Micah or Totran. It is much bigger than this, and our focus is on assisting through our work, making an impact to people. So sometime around January, we developed the 6 operations out of that 12-page paper. And David, we got a lot of feedback from your audience that it's too strategic, it's not science enough, this is altruistic. At the end of the day, it's a strategic document. If you're not familiar with reading strategic documents, which many people aren't, you go, I don't get it, I don't follow the line. Well, since then, David, we have 6 operations going on simultaneously worldwide. And they are 2 in the U.S., 2 in Europe, and 2 in Asia. And they are literally happening as we go. And through subcontracting, negotiations, we're going to manifest these over the next 12 months. One is in the shoot in the next couple of months. You'll see it at a theater near you. I can't describe it. But back in mid-January, we laid out to those parties interested in Kalos the vision as community space, and then the operational, how it's going to get done. And since then, it has gone. I mean, I looked at it last night. I looked at that presentation. I looked at where we're at. And we're exactly on time. And in one case, we're actually faster than we thought we were going to get to achieve some of these things. The projects are not solely just a business deal. Again, our business deal and our deal flow is something that we do every day. It doesn't change. These projects are of larger nature, dealing with everything from economic development in particular regions of the world to having the dialogues necessary. Those dialogues that are necessary to be able to bring parties to an agreement, because those agreements can become then policy or resolutions that then can help drive the market. So all those things are happening, but the one thing I can tell you most proud of is the decision the board of Kalos Partners did to establish the foundation. We knew from our experience overseas and what we do, again, to your audience, if we were just your typical consultants, we would have never looked at things like foundations, global communications, trying to integrate. But we knew from our trips overseas that the work we do is very unique. And we needed the foundation came as a result of Kalos Partners really needing a global platform beyond that of our work, because, again, you can't mix the work with some of these projects because they're not in the same category financially and they're going in different directions. So we made a decision to establish it, and I'll leave it to Totran on how we met because we've known each other for many years. She's been a family friend, but it was very recently in our whirlwind to Europe back in the fall where we had a very strong dialogue. And when you listen to her skill set, you will realize that she epitomizes the way we tried to describe last week, last time we spoke, she epitomizes what that community space is. So I don't want to steal her thunder, but she's done very well. On top of that, you know, as some of you know, Kelsey then took off to Europe and established a set of deals that were monumental, that are going to come proliferate later in the fall. And you will see those. But in our trip to Europe, we also had some great discussions with the International Astronautical Federation. We had some great discussions with ESA. We're having discussion with a number of agencies, associations, partners in Europe, because they understand what we're trying to do now, and they're very supportive. So it's been very slow in terms of getting the word out, because David, as you know, we don't go bragging on Space News. You're not going to see us. You know, if you're looking for us, we have a website. It's www.kalispartners.com. You can send us our request. If you need information on community and space, we'll send it to you. If you're looking to say, hey, what kind of projects you do, are you doing in my region of the world, you'll be surprised. we can always use the help. Some people say, hey, I want to get involved in some of the deals you're doing in financially. We've had everything from high net worth individuals to family offices to institutional banking coming to us. And again, we make it very simple. There's a website. There's a link. We leave it very open-ended, and you come talk to us, and we'll help you. And somebody says, hey, do you charge a ton of money when we do it? As a matter of fact, it depends. We've had situations where in the past 3 months, we have helped out of our own time people and entrepreneurs that were startups. We have said, you know what, in this case, we're just going to help you because you have something special here, and we don't go into this whole big consulting, big thing. We make it very simple for everyone. Whether you're in the space domain or you're outside of the space domain and you're trying to come in and you need someone to help you consult to see where you fit. So that was in February. And now throughout March, we have been getting a lot of the projects ready. We've been all over the U.S. We've been in California. We've been in Florida. We've been in Texas. And you saw from Kelsey in Europe. And as a matter of fact, we were too busy. We couldn't even make it on the plane to go back to Asia. We were in Asia earlier in the year. So we've been around the world yet a second time as Kalis. And again, about a month ago, it was great news to have Michael Walter Range on the team and be able to bring him on. He is a partner in our company, and he's the president. And if you in the industry do not know who Michael Walter Range is, just check out the Space Report the last 10 years. He's been the leader on that. That is the type of the space that we needed in the company. We've been externally the whole time, but this time with great pleasure to tell everybody that, yes, he is in the team. And he does, as everybody knows, he's a very humble guy and a straight shooter, and the work he does is unbelievable. And I have the utmost respect for him. So I'm always grateful for that, that he's here. But, so now we came to then we've been here at the symposium. We're here at the Broadmoor today to try to catch our breath as we hit the road again in the next couple of weeks.
Can you back up and tell especially new listeners, but remind listeners who heard you in December, what is the Kalis Partners vision? Because I think that it's really a great vision, and listeners should hear it, even if they've already heard it.
Yeah, so thank you, David. At the end, to all of your audiences, Kalis Partners, again, has a day job, like we spoke. But at the end, the way we do this is about the community in space. And that is being able to get an established framework to have different stakeholders come in and participate in order to either standardize, unify in some cases, and bring together the right community for space. And that may mean where we sit on everything from communications in space to relationships between machines and life to all kinds of different things that are out there that are left untouched and are not either well-defined so that others can come in. By that community and space work, at the end of the day, like I said in the last show, we're about connecting the universe to the human soul. And this is not an altruistic thing that we're going to save the world. Please please, in the audience, if you think that, I would tell you, guess again. What we are saying, simply saying, we are trying to help people through our work ensure that they maximize the best opportunity they can to connect to space, not by inspiration, not by imagination, but by decision making. So in other words, it's not for everybody. We know that the current world environment is not for everybody. It's not working out for everybody. We get it. But regardless of all the challenges that are going on, our work is to get the best opportunity possible for anyone that is making decisions in the space domain to contribute and be a part of it. And everybody thinks it's got to be building a machine. In some cases, the decision may be deciding on the type of education your children do, deciding the type of area or network you want to do. It could be everything from that to building widgets like we do, to be in financing, to be on the regulatory side. But our job is to be able to reach out pretty much around the world. And yeah.
So if you come across someone who isn't thinking about a path to their objectives that goes through space, do you work with them to sort of enhance their path by going through space? Do you make a case for and attempt to show them that if they include space in what they're doing, their path can not only be maybe easier, maybe be quicker, but also more beneficial for them on different levels?
Absolutely, David. And the way we do it is through looking at economic development regionally, nationally, internationally, and through different operations that we do on our consult at a strategic level. We then develop the right economic development plans, the right decision-making points within our community on Earth about what things can people do to connect to space. So when we meet an individual, like, to answer your question, we walk them through how they fit in their community today. And if you listen to the last show, towards the end, to save you time, not listen to an hour and a half, the last 15 minutes or so, it articulates how Kalis presented a community on Earth that is a framework that we use to describe pretty much the planet. And we have tested it in every major country in the planet, and it has been well accepted by those in the space domain and those outside. And from that dialogue of what is the Maslow hierarchy of needs for the community that they live in to be able to articulate the ways in they can contribute to another community, this other community being in the space domain.
So you work so this is applicable to both at the government level, the NGO level, and even the corporate level or the business level.
David, our clientele goes into places I never in a million years thought we would be doing. We work with governments. We could work with everything from defense to different government agencies at different levels. I always thought it would be just locally here in the United States, and that's not true. We found that around the world, that kind of dialogue was needed in order to integrate some of the siloed efforts, both on technology, individual decision-making, policy, that were happening in other markets, in other communities on Earth, that could be applied to space and vice versa. So, and from there, and that's what brought us the connection to realizing community in space. That it isn't about space. And, you know, I can't wait until Totran comes on, because she has a very, very unique view of this and that she's bringing on to the team. But for us, it was very, very clear that the discussions with non-space actors in different levels, even at the individual level, and being able to interview and query people. Remember, one of our lines of effort is general audiences, which we have to reach out and touch them through surveys. And we are working on that right now, but all the preliminary work right now has paid off in giving us enough initial data to get started. to get started.
You do have an email question from Jerry, who is in Davenport, Iowa. And he says, I'm at work, David, so I'm not using the phone. And he says, Jose, usually a business or an entity looks at an industry and then attempts to provide a service or a product and fill a niche that's not being filled. So listening to what you're saying, there's no shortage of space consulting companies, of financial people offering advice, marketing people, all sorts of different companies doing that on a global level. Can you help us understand the specific niche by your organization and how you're attempting to fill it?
Absolutely.
I think he wants you to differentiate more is my
take. This is good. So what you and I forgot his name. Could you please let me
Jerry.
Know his name?
Jerry is in Davenport, Iowa. Yeah.
Jerry, when we use consulting in the space domain, about 2 years ago, there was maybe one or two major companies that did consulting, usually for the government in defense, to be able to assist them on the international, what we would call government to government contractor type business deals. And there are some really, really strong guys that do that today and make a lot of money. When we started, we looked at the entire private sector. So that is everything else. So what's different from us is we look at the private sector. And that meaning companies that are not doing subcontracting with the government that are either starting out or trying to accomplish something. We're looking at Earth companies that whose technology, financing, and goals may be going in one direction, but we can see the potential in the space domain and be able to consult them to have a different revenue stream within their company. In other words, their Earth business continues, but they can invest, grow, to go after space domain things. And that could be everything from agriculture to medical. There's even financing companies that are looking to try to figure out how to come in. And most importantly, what we found is so that was 2 years ago. There was us and one other company we knew of that was very, very small. Today, there are seven that we're tracking globally that kind of spun off seeing what we were doing. So it's the consulting part of it is not as big as you think. The second part is that differentiates us is we do the financing structure as well. So when we do the consulting, we'll then do the legal work with our legal partners to build the exact financing structure that works for that strategy. That's not something consultants are normally doing, nor are they qualified to do, nor they have a 300-pound friend that helps them do that. And then not only that, the consultants that do that and do the financing, they don't put their own money down. Most of them that put their own money down, they don't want to have to think about the plan. They just want to hear the plan, say it's good or not good, it's going to make me returns. So what makes us different is that we looked across every silo that you see in the market that doesn't connect to space, we go after that. We then help them get the financial structure that could meet the regulatory requirements for space, and then we invest in it. That is completely different. The other folks that do that, and I won't mention any other companies, they want to write a lot about policy. They consult on policy issues, or they consult on how you make your technology better because there's an efficiency, or systems engineering, or let's get two people to meet. We do a little bit more than that, and because we do it that way, we then have to take it to the next level, and that meant having approach a project at a global level to say, look, there's some fundamental issues that have to deal with the geopolitical play, the financing, and the regulatory when it comes to space. So the board of Kalis said, we're going to take this on. We have the experience to handle problems that big from our previous work and from our bio, and that's what we do. What I'll also do for him and all the listeners, David, I think it would be good is if I go into some of the lessons we've learned so far.
Okay, let's do it. We've got time.
Yeah. And back to Terry, to his question is, The reason why I can't go into every project we're doing to say, hey, the tangible project is this and it's going to happen in this location is because we're still waiting for some signatures to be completed so they're solidified. So as soon as they're solidified and signed, we'll be talking to you and probably come back on this show.
Okay.
But I'll tell you some of what we learned so far. And we thought, remember, if you remember from the last show, David, we said, hey, we're going to kick it off in the summer. It literally kicked off the day we hung up that phone with you because we either had other parties interested that don't normally listen to the show came straight to us and said, what are you doing again? Do I think you know? Are you doing what I think you're doing? And then, the momentum took off. So we didn't, don't expect Community and Space to have this kickoff show. There's no conference. We are doing it. But I'll give you some examples of what we learned in being able to validate. The first thing we validated is that this is a customer-focused market. And that means that it is B2B. In other words, services that are being provided in the space domain are from company to company. Somebody says, well, what about broadband and the stuff that goes to individuals and the cell phone? Everybody loves to say, you use space when you use a cell phone. Those are B2B2C financial, downstream of space. And what happens is when you have B2B2B2C and you don't have a B2C direct, what you do is you alienate an entire consumer market that could help grow it. Now, there's a reason why that is. It is because space is hard. It is because space has been led by governments, and right now the preponderance is led by governments, and governments represent people. So, therefore, that logic flow says, the people are being taken care of. And somebody says, well, this is kind of like the tech boom. Remember, the tech boom, for those of you that are very familiar with it, they had a consumer market to grow it in. So it's not, so space is not tech yet.
Yeah, there's no consumer market.
There's no consumer market. So then how are you going to tell me, how the people are going to go? All of you that aspire to be creating widgets in space, being able to move humanity to space, you don't even have a consumer market that gains the interest, that gains the decision making, that get those individuals to participate on a grand scale, to be a part of the community in space, whatever that is. Whether it's Mars, the moon, or whatever. So we've been able to say, look, without a doubt, that there is not many things, if any, connecting to an individual level directly from a service, from a particular sale. So B2B2C, no B2C. The second thing is that we learned there is a ceiling to the number of LEO constellations that could be up at one time. So in other words, a lot of you, the audience, believes that it is small little CubeSat, big sky, I will be able to transmit because there's so many different orbits in which I can put this thing in. The fact is that there's a ceiling. And is it because of, we're going to run out of space? Not necessarily. Is it because of perhaps interference? Oh, yes. Is it because of perhaps the current regulatory standards on the ITU in terms of managing frequencies, the broadband demand signal on Earth? So there is a number of things that if they stay the way they are, David, I'm not, and this kind of goes to the prediction, if they stay the way they are, there's going to be a ceiling to how many satellites are going up to 1,500. Up to 1,500 miles. So just be aware, and that's a big deal. Why? Because there's a significant number of people and a significant number of investment firms that are banking on that, on the growth of constellations. So now the ceiling plays a good thing for the market, which could say, okay, it's a competition, it raises prices, it's able to do better services, it'll get a better competition, but it's also a challenge. Because again, today, the alignment to a lot of the technology that goes up in the air is aligned to a government. And somebody says, no, there are all these private companies doing things. I can assure you that almost every private company that you think of has a government contract supporting a government agency in the world. So in other words, they're an extension of the government. And somebody go, no. They're privately owned, not publicly traded. No. Listen, the moment you take a contract from the United States government or any government, you have to support that government demands and that government needs. And by the way, regulatory at the UN level is about nation states. So it's a very, very hard thing to decipher and break away what one would call a private company from what truly it is, which is a private company on a government contract supporting a government, which limits then the amount of market share you can go after as a private company. So that's a big deal. And how does that impact the community in space? Well, it puts it for a pretty sincere competition between nation states, and it puts it for a very, very good, healthy, depends on how you manage it, competition in the private sector as to who owns what orbit, what is transmitted, who's going to own the signals that come down or go up, either way.
Let me intercept. Let me bring in something else. Two things. One is a question from another listener. But I often on the show talk to these people advocating nirvana here, because the space cadets do that. And I talk about market realities. I don't use the same language you do. But, isn't this going to be a saturated market? Do you really think this is going to go on endlessly forever, that there's going to be endless opportunities? Or are there going to be a lot of fallouts when they find out that they don't have market share, can't get market share, that the market isn't developing to the endless degree that they think it is? And, there are long gaps in the responses, and some people get it. Most of the committed space cadets, you know them as well as I do, dismiss a lot of that because they do think in terms of the big picture, and this is so wonderful compared to what it's been over the last 20 years. Of course, it's going to continue forever. But what made me think of this was the email from Josh, who is in New York City, and he said, David and Jose, I recently read a journal article, and unfortunately, I don't remember who wrote it or the journal, but it was a professor, and his specialty is in warehousing, and you may think that has absolutely nothing to do with space, but he talked about these companies like OneWeb and the SpaceX satellite company wanting to do constellations of thousands and thousands of satellites. They have no capability, no market share, no financial resources to put all of these in orbit. What they want to do is warehouse the potential and warehouse the frequency bandwidth to keep it off the market from other companies trying to come in and take away market share of non-existing markets, but at least they want to hold it. So, Jose, the official term seems to be warehousing, where companies that have the ability to do this go in and get licenses or regulatory approval from the FCC for these thousands and thousands of constellations with no real plans to implement it, but instead they want to warehouse it for future value for their corporation. Can you comment on that?
I can.
Are you familiar with what he's talking about, Biden?
Oh, yes, I am, because that was going to be my next point. So I want to go to the – I want to tell the audience that I kid you not, I do not set this up with David. We do not set this up. He literally is serendipitous that he actually cuts me off, and I'm about to do the next bullet, and somebody asks write a linear question that goes with it. I am not familiar with your paper, because there's a bunch of other papers that articulate that financial market. And there are two bullets of things we learn that people need to understand, that the community, and we shared this opening, need to understand. And again, first things first, what SpaceX and OneWeb does is their business for them, and they will do what they think is best for their profiting margins. And God bless them for it. That's their job to do. And if they win the market share, good for them. That is, in terms of Kayla's, we don't think of it of what he would say is warehousing, good or bad, if that is their strategy. We simply say that is the market. It is what it is. So we get a lot of, in Kayla's, just so you know, behind the scenes, we get a lot of polarizing views on things like this. Warehousing is wrong. You're not letting the market grow. No. We have to tell everybody, take emotion out of it. They are companies that are trying to survive, that want to make money and want to make an impact the way they see it. Good for them. And we tell them good for them. Whether we agree or not on the strategy, that's not for me to decide. I ain't no judge. I'm not in their company. So we help a lot of, some of the consulting we do is helping people to put the emotion aside and say, look, they're doing what they think is right for them. Good for them. Oh, but it's not morally right. How do you know? It hasn't even been done. How are you going to put a judgment? Do you work there? No. Okay, then let's not talk about that. Let's not worry about that. So I want to tell to the audience that when you see these actions, don't put a judgment on it. Let it be, because they're doing within the legal framework what they are allowed to do. Now, what it is valid on his discussion about the warehousing is the following. First, we got to understand private companies, non-traded on the stock exchange. So in other words, you're not publicly traded, you're privately owned. There are very few companies that are profiting today at above 5 to 10% margins. Very few. Let me say that again. Very few. Now, so our listeners are going, okay, and we talked a little bit about it last time we were here. But we validated it, and we've looked through it again. We looked at it one more time. And we said, okay, so if companies are not necessarily making a lot of money, they're only making very small margins, how they're staying alive? Well, because if they're publicly traded, they are stockbrokers and they're people who help those companies do very well. And by the way, some of those companies in the stock exchange are mostly in the defense sector, not in the space sector. There's no such thing as a publicly traded space sector. That doesn't exist yet. There are people trying to do it. They're trying to do things like ETFs and all kinds of stuff, all kinds of financial things. But remember, publicly traded companies sit in something different than space. And those guys have a way to be managed to make a lot of money for their shareholders. And good for them for doing it. Not a good or bad. That's the way business is done. So in the private, non-publicly traded company, you have to be very astute. And you have to be very astute. There is some compromises and some gains that go with it. And the beauty of private ownership, different from public trading, is that you have more models that will help your company survive over a long period while not necessarily profiting or making very small profit. So, and again, not going to go into details on who does what to whom, but I can share with your audience that, in fact, there are financial growth models for private companies that make significant returns for the investors. By the way, in the millions, in the 25 times, whatever they invested. But the technology and the company itself is not profiting. They have operational capital. In other words, they pay their salaries. They make sure that the widgets are being made. So I want to make sure that your audience is educated and say, well, Jose, give me an example of that. Well, you know, tell your audience. They could go look at something simple like a Gordon growth model. You can look that up on the internet. Excuse me, sorry. And they can check that out. And again, I'm not saying that every company is doing a Gordon growth model. No. And by the way, Gordon growth model is a great thing. It was designed in 1953 specifically so that private companies could sustain a long duration in a struggle to get into a market, into a publicly traded market. So that it was designed for that. That is not a negative thing. But unfortunately, you put emotion to it, and then it goes wrong. Now, the challenge that we see, and that's from Kalis, not, you know, for us, is that if you have national security contracts, depending on companies that are in different growth models like this, then you may have an issue. And the reason for that is because when those companies don't do well, the risk goes back to the contracting office, not to the individual. Because those with the money are in a model that they will extract their value. So that is a challenge. And again, I want to reiterate to the audience and to anybody in the industry, that is not a bad thing, nor is it a good thing. It's just the way it is, guys. And our job at consultant, being the better consultants in this industry, is we look at it objectively and we go, okay, they're doing what they need to do. So how do we help them? How do we help the government? How do you help the people? How do you help get them to profit? So we don't take sides. we realize it is what it is. But that's an example of what's happening when it comes to answering that warehousing, which is a big deal. And I just told you another bullet on the, you know, another bullet or another sharing about the ceiling being there. So you do the math of where that's going. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, but you do the math. And again, it's not a negative or a good thing. It is the business, and that it is what it is. So don't get emotional about it, and work with what's happening rather than what you wish it does, which is a challenge that the industry has. Instead of working what the challenges is right now as is, we keep talking about the things we wish. Oh, all the old metal debris gone, all this gone, all the regulatory perfect. I got it. It's not going to be perfect, guys. That's why we come in, to consult, to work through these challenges. And in the meantime, having the global projects that could help educate and get these things, these issues in the right box. But again, great work by both of those companies you mentioned. If that's their strategy, good for them.
By the way, the professor that Josh was referring to is Brendan Cunningham. And he's at Eastern Connecticut State University, and he's a warehousing expert, whatever that is. I mean,
I'm looking that up.
I had no idea there was.
I'm looking that up.
So, field called
warehouse. Mr. Cunningham.
But it's Dr. Brendan Cunningham. I've invited him on the show. As it turns out, I had forgotten about it. He picked a date where I'm going to be in Los Angeles due to my son's surgery, and it hasn't been followed up on. So that's something that Josh reminded me to do. But, you know, one of the things that strikes me, and one of the many reasons why I have strong faith in the competence of what you're doing, and I don't chalk you up to a kumbaya movement, of which there are countless kumbaya space movements on the globe. I'm sure you are as aware of that as I am. Is that you're reality based, and what you just talked about a few minutes ago is the wish list isn't what you're making decisions upon. You're basing decisions and advice and financing on the reality of what is, and how do you work with what is, and maybe the wish list is a distant goal or maybe a near-term goal if you can, you know, achieve it, but you can't make policy and financial decisions and things that count and matter if you really want to be successful and grow based on fantasy. You have to deal with what is in front of you. And it's often not perfect, and it's often messy, and it's often something that you may not even like, but that's what is.
Yeah, David, you're absolutely right. And that reality that we live in, we understand it, we acknowledge it, but we also know that there's a way to steer the Titanic, so to speak, in terms of strategic globally, that Kayla's owns, has propriety on through community and space, and says, look, there is a way not to get to an altruistic end state, but there is a way to get to opportunities where you maybe perhaps minimize conflict. I didn't say anything about peace. there's a challenge of peace if you could do it in space, why aren't you doing it on Earth? And having served in the military 24 years, I know why that is. Financing will always be financing. At the end of the day, like you said, those decisions are to big returns to those who are taking the risk and putting money down. And then you have the regulatory side, when we look at space on the regulatory side, the first question we ask people is, what are the principles in the framework in which you're trying to create these policies? And, you get the glassy-eyed look from really, really very, very smart people with very, very good intentions that can't see it. And then when we have advised them that, hey, the problem you're looking at is not a space problem, it's something else problem, they're like, no way, you kid, no, I've been doing this for 25 years. Okay, there's a reason why you're still on the same problem 25 years later, and you move five steps, because maybe that problem you're bringing up is not a space problem. It is maybe an Earth problem, and there are other people that can handle it. I won't go into details into that, because that'll get me in trouble with someone out there. But we find ourselves, David, on a regular basis dealing with folks that they're trying to superimpose a reality in the future that they have not been able to either prove or get and want to do it now. And every time we see it, we got to correct it. And sometimes it goes really smooth, and sometimes it's not so smooth. But it is what it is. There is one more topic I want to bring up to you, David.
Okay.
From Community and Space, to kind of tell you what we learned. And by the way, did most people in the industry knew this? So the people that play the finance game, they know this. Those who are CFOs of companies, those who are not the guy that is CPA, but chief financial officers, they know what they're doing. And I'm not a finance guy. We're a strategy. I'm a strategy guy. Remember, CFO is Kelsey, not me. So they know a lot of the things I brought up before. But the one interesting thing that we were able to get to the bottom of in the last few months is this discussion about innovation and disruption. And I will tell you, the word innovation is improperly used, at least when it comes to space, too many times. What we are now doing, what Kalis is doing, and the foundation may take this on, because there's a lot of definition issues when it comes to the business aspect of space that may require some dialogue between nations and others to be able to get a better answer on this. But Kalis partners are the day job people trying to work community in space and trying to exercise the business of space through a community in space framework. What we found is that at the end, an innovation, the way we describe it, is 0 to 1 to the consumer. So in other words, if it's something that an individual uses regularly and it's new, they didn't use before, that is an innovation. It is not a customer-based requirements from the government. We are finding that everything else that is not that is a disruption. So the way we are now educating folks, our clients and folks that we work with, is look, because those words have meaning. If you say you have an innovation, there's a completely different type of financial investor, financial path that you take just by that word, that somebody like Kalis and somebody that's doing strategy is going to take you through. And by the way, the dudes that do this consulting, they don't understand that. They're going to be sending you the wrong way. And there's a lot of guys that do that and gals that do that. Innovation is 0 to 1 to a consumer, to an individual person. Something new they didn't do the day before that they're doing now with your product or with your service individually. And they make an individual choice to take it, i.e. cell phone. That's the cell phone as we know it, the smartphone as we know it. That's an innovation. You know, a lot of the tech industry, individual decisions to be on that website, that's an innovation because they now do things differently than they did the day before. Disruption is when you're putting efficiencies or you're improving on a requirement existing. So we spend a lot of time, especially in the government, dealing government and military defense space, about innovation. And in fact, maybe 90%, there's a 10% of innovation in the government, but it's usually in the defense and classified with a very specific title funding within that government's budgeting cycle that in which they create something out of nothing for impacting individuals. There are very few. But the preponderance of government is requirement-based. There's no innovation on a requirement. In a requirement, the taxpayers are not going to pay for something out of thin air. They usually pay for something that exists and they want to improve, or something that's already been proven and it just needs to be made for a single customer, in this case, the government. So that you would think that distinction, and I know that sounds silly, but that distinction is a very big deal to the industry. And we're finding that having the dialogues in that helps us on our day job with Kalis partners and being able to construct deals. And then on the right-hand side with the Kalis Foundation, it helps us better communicate exactly what people want. Do they want innovation or want a disruption? I can't wait. You know, and again, Tochan won't probably get into that level of detail, but because of her time available. But I think that's a great discussion.
We're at the point for a break. You want to take our pause here?
Let's do that. And then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some of the initial predictive analysis we've done on on Community in Space.
Okay, so listeners, we are going to take our pause, and we'll be gone about 3 minutes. Your phone calls are welcome, as are your emails, 1-866-687-7223, and also email Dr. Space, DRSPACE, at thespaceshow.com. Stay put. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support The Space Show button. Your contribution will help The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of The Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And the Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality. Welcome back, everybody. Part two of our program today on this Friday about Kayla's partners and the foundation. And our first guest for the show, Jose, is still with us, and he'll transition us in a minute to Totran, our second guest. But what do you see going forward? Have you spotted any trends? What are you suggesting for our future, near term, maybe a little further out than near term?
So I want to first share with you, David, that one of the things so it's a combination of things. We see a few things that the future will have because of the nature of the trends. The best one, one of the comments I was going to have was the discussion on the warehousing that your audience brought up. And the way we saw it, to better describe it, is you cannot own property in space. Everybody knows that. But you could do an operational transfer fee, a comprehensive operational transfer fee of satellites, orbits, and things to that effect. So, and again, that is a big if you continue the path, the regulatory path for both approvals as well, you know, in launching and being up there, as well as communication, as well as other factors that are dealing globally that most people aren't looking at. Of course, the bigger companies are doing, but most of you that are starting out, you can't see that right now. But that is a challenge today. The second is, in terms of launch vehicles, because of that ceiling and because of the demand signal, we don't see that many small launch vehicles happen. Now, we could be wrong. Again, David, 5 years from now, you could be laughing at me and your audience be laughing at me. But what we're finding is, If the logic is right on the first one, on this warehousing thing, then you don't need to send one or two things up. You're going to send a bunch of things up, and you're going to fix a bunch of things at the same time, and you're going to have the ability to do O&M in space, a lot of great work doing there. So in terms of small tactical type of launching, don't know if it's there. We're not going to say it's dead, but we're saying it's low. And we advise folks to take a hard look at that as they go for a very specific, if they have a very specific revenue model, then we always help. And I mean, we must have looked at least 10 different companies over the last year to assist them. So, but it depends, you know, one can't do the other. Both logic of a lot of LEO launches, small sat launches, a lot of small launchers in large constellations, they don't mix. It just isn't there. There could be some other model, but the next thing is, a lot of things have come on your show as well about the moon, and they bring it to us. What I've shared, and I've been very clear about it, is look, if the moon is made of cheese, the mice will come get it. But nobody's proven that the moon is made of cheese yet. In other words, they're saying, hey, there is resources there, but I need to know how much and how much turns to what. Until that's figured out, it's going to be very, very difficult on the investment plan that comes in on the backside of it. We do look at it at Scalus, just because some clients ask us to look at that. We are looking at it. We're continuing. And that's something that a lot of the world is looking into, how the moon operates. So we see it as an opportunity for us to communicate, at least in our business dialogue as consultants about it. But to this day, we don't see that. We'll see what happens, goes from there. And the last thing I'll close with before we go into Chotran is that we truly believe that what's going to happen, the way this is going to work for the betterment of all, even nation states that are competing against each other like they are right now, is to have the right economic development plans within certain regions to address their international trade that goes with space. And we are working on that diligently, and we have a lot of proprietary work that we've already done on this. And we truly believe that a hub that has the international capability for trade within a particular region that absorbs it, a part of the economic development plan, is very key. As we come back on the show, hopefully in the next couple months or in the next 4 to 5 months again, we're probably going to dedicate a lot of time to that. So it's not a teaser. It's not some stealth, we're some stealth project or anything. We're simply seeing that if you really want to make a dent in the space industry, like if you really want to be a visionary, you're going to have to get out of your spacesuit and start being an earthling and work with Earth people that are not in space to address space. You're going to have to deal with the non-space actors that are on Earth leading the Earth if you really want to make space better for everybody. And there is unfortunately a lot of hesitation there by our space leaders or visionaries to go out of their box and have the right strategic and financial dialogue. We're taking that on. We'll see where it goes. Like I told you before, we could fall on our face. I could be on the side of 405 up in Seattle going, hey, I tried to go to space and I didn't make it. But we're going to give it a try. And we have a great team. We have great partners, big partners globally that are helping us quietly to achieve community in space. Good leadership all around the world helping us with that in places I never thought we'd get support from. And we're very, very excited for where we're going. But like I said at the beginning of the show, the biggest accomplishment in the last year is the Kalos Foundation and what they do. And more importantly, this incredible person, that I look forward to see her shine here in the next 40 minutes or so, Chotran Gwynn, who I'm indebted to already. She's been around with us for 2 months, but I'm already indebted to her. So without further ado, let me look at the Chotran real quick and go, are you ready? You ready to swap? Yeah, she's nodding her head. She's ready to swap. All right, sister. Here we go.
Hi, David.
Hi, Chotran. It's nice to welcome you to the space show. How are you
Thanks
today?
Thanks for having me here.
A real pleasure. Why don't you start out and tell us a little about your background and your experience, because you didn't come to this as a space cadet. You weren't a committed space person, and all of a sudden your career and your work is focused around space. So how did that happen?
Yeah, so never in a million years did I ever think I'd be here talking about a space show. So thanks again. Well, when did it start for me? Well, I met Jose when he got married to my dear friend Kelsey, which I think he mentioned a bit ago, a few years ago. And then a few months ago, while I was busy in my little research world, buried in a pile of papers, if you can imagine, madly writing my PhD dissertation, Kelsey and Jose started talking to me about community in space and about building a better future for humanity. So So, you know, no biggie. No, but my eyes got big. I got it. As you saw my bio, I have wide interests, and it hit me that space is the ultimate domain where all human organizational dynamics will play out in the most interesting of ways. Are we competing? Are we cooperating? Getting to better understand our relationships with each other and with ourselves, our relationships with our past, present, and future. I think this all comes to one place. And as we talk about space, it's a really interesting time.
Was it a big transition for you to start to see space and, well, actually even think about space, because you probably weren't even thinking about it, but you, not only did you have to start thinking about it, but you had to see it in a way that was completely different for you?
Yes. Since Jose and Kelsey planted the seed, space has gradually taken up almost all of my mind space, no pun intended. But when I think about the connection and kind of how I've kind of transitioned in the space is, you know, how I've been touched by space before consciously was through a few memorable life moments. And the first that I can really recall was the Challenger explosion. You know, I was a first grader sitting in the classroom, watching it live, in some sense not really getting what had happened at that young age, and seeing Mrs. Johnson gasp and cover her mouth, seeing her turn off the TV. She carried on with the rest of the day, doing a great job not disrupting the small world of our kids. It was really unforgettable for me. And then later in engineering school at UVA, I was again in a classroom, but this time learning to talk about the instrumental communication issues that led up to the Challenger explosion. So it kind of, you know, looped back around. And then I would say, you know, a second kind of space-related life moment was in middle school when I applied for a NASA program and was passed up, and that was also unforgettable. And I think since then, you know, space has been a little bit more present when I think about astrological theories, which I won't be talking about today. Or when I come across, you know, a Neil deGrasse Tyson interview, I just love him. It's a quote about how the universe may take, you know, make some people feel small, but for him it makes them actually feel big. And, I mean, 90% of our bodies are made up of elements that come from the explosion of stars. So, you know, it's very unforgettable. But, you know, as I started talking to Kelsey and Jose about community and space, and starting to think for myself, like, how do we connect to the general public, as he's mentioned to you, is one of the broader missions of the Kalis Foundation. I've come to realize that, you know, space is not really about space. It's really about being human at the end of the day. And I'd be happy to share some developing thoughts on this, but I also really look forward to hearing what your listeners think.
Okay, and so... listeners, you can call or email us, but also if you're listening on the archives, you can certainly let us know what you think by posting comments on our blog, and we would appreciate that, and I'll make sure our guests see these comments. Tell us a little bit about how you connect to... a question I frequently ask people is, how do you connect to the general audience? Because just connecting over and over again to the space community and expecting miraculous progress and accomplishments and all sorts of changes and things is kind of limiting, to say the least, because we're already part of this. But it's people that aren't part of it that you want to bring in to understand the value and the importance of it. How do you do that?
Exactly. No, you know, as a foundation, we're still learning as well, and we're trying to figure that out. I think you really hit the nail on the head, that it's really, you know, it's not going to be, it can't be a push kind of strategy. It really has to be a pull, but a pull in the sense of we're coming from a place that's very real, and that comes from deep understanding of what it means to be human and what it means to move through the different moments in our daily lives. And so in that sense, we definitely want to have a different feel in terms of the foundation, in terms of research that we do and things like that. So I would think, you know, one of the easiest ways to think about getting people to start to think about space, or at least to be a bit more conscious about it, is the fact that, you know, space is enabling our everyday lives. And I don't think we can really separate it anymore from how we live. And we're using space as a physical medium through which, you know, we get things done or we improve our lives on Earth. I mean, how much of our day is satellite-enabled, if you think about that? And if you think about even the new range of images that we're able to see, things like that. So I think that's sort of the most kind of basic way to kind of get people to think about how much of their daily lives is actually enabled by space. So that's kind of the most basic level. And then if you look at the other end, space is also contributing to our own existence. And so engaging in space this way is about really appreciating what exists and where we come from, whether we want to talk about the Big Bang or our body's chemical composition or scale of space, things like this. And, of course, I mentioned before Neil deGrasse Tyson, which I think has done a great job in getting everyday people to go, wow, about space.
Do you think we're in some way connected to space as individuals? A lot of what we talk about is space is kind of out there, like the computer industry or like the medical industry, or you want to go study physics or something. But to many of us, myself included, I'm not really part of this or that, but I feel very much that I'm that space includes me. And so for it to be an area of work or for whatever, I understand at some level that I'm really part of space. It's not like an industry out there that I have an interest in. I don't know if I'm explaining myself very clearly.
Yeah, no, I totally get it, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's exactly what has been swirling around in my head is, how do we get others to kind of also deeply have the same kind of understanding that it's really fundamental part of us. And it's funny, because as I got into this, one of my kind of, funny experiences is actually telling people about what I'm getting involved in, and then just watching their eyes get big, and then you have this awkward moment where people are like, should I clarify what she's talking about? And, half the time it's usually, are you talking about outer space? And I think it's, maybe more mainstream for us to think about space in terms of design space, other types of concepts of organizational concepts of space. But it seems like people really, outer space is outer space, and we call it outer for a reason. I think that also reinforces this image or this feeling or this experience that it's out there. So I think part of it's also terminology as well. And I think the deep understanding that you have and the connection that you have with space could also, come from your understanding that it involves a lot of things that are very human, as I mentioned before. And one thing I like to think about in regards to space is, how it's a way for us to use our imagination. It's, it's a story of our past, our present, future. It's an aesthetics or a projection of what we think is beautiful or scary. So, we can think about space as like a source of inspiration and in the sense that it engages our imagination. And we see this in a lot of different ways, like through the act of exploration as it relates to envisioning space, also through film, sci-fi, through mythology, astrology, other types of human stories that engage space-related things. And actually, I also want to make point, too, that it's when I say stories, it doesn't really mean that these are just stories that have no impact on real life, actually. So just yesterday, I was speaking to the Hawaii Island Economic Development Board, and I was told about how Hawaiians reached Hawaii by canoe and wayfaring. And the way the board is making space relevant today to Hawaiians is by getting people, including indigenous people, to understand that space in the 21st century is the equivalent of wayfaring. So it's very, very deeply connected to their cultural stories, and this is how they're kind of creating that connection. So I thought that was really a wonderful story. And they had this little booth in the middle of this big conference center that was full of all these tech companies, and it was really a little oasis for me, being a culture expert.
You have a email question from Carolyn in Seattle, and Carolyn says, when you're having actual business meetings and real hard, tough things around finance and some of the issues you've talked about earlier, my hunch is if you started to talk about this connection to space, their eyes would glaze over and you would lose them, because they're seeing this as a business opportunity or a way to make money or a way to meet their NGO type of goals or something like that. How do you present what space is and be taken seriously and not have it be counterproductive to what you're trying to accomplish?
That's a great question. Thank you, Carolyn. So maybe this is where it might help to segue into get a bit more into what the Kayla Foundation is doing. So our mission, which I think Jose mentioned, is to broaden participation in the space domain. And so I like to think of the Foundation as a cultivator of collective wisdom action, you know, that's needed to advance the space domain. So as part of this, we have to be very attentive to the different types of stakeholders that we are engaging and to the very specific types of contexts that we're creating. So we are not, let's say, I mean, as I'm trying to also connect to your listeners, I'm talking a little bit more about, you know, how space is really about being deeply human. But this doesn't mean that this is a story that we're taking into all of our meetings, depending on the people that are involved and stuff. So what we're doing is we're supporting community in space that, in that we're bringing together diverse stakeholders, uniquely working to ensure that everyone who wants to take part can take part and that no one is left behind and that we get to the deepest level of dialogue and interaction, and that this is going to mean serving different stakeholders differently in terms of these conversations that we're creating. And so maybe this is also a good time to mention, so a couple of days ago, just as an example of what Carolyn's asking, a couple of days ago we actually launched our informal working dialogue series. And this is something that we plan to take around the world. We had a small set of group of symposium attendees from different countries, different types of organizations, different levels of hierarchy, and importantly, from different levels of knowledge. And I can say one thing, that there was no difference in the level of insight that came from any of the people that spoke up, even if it was just to say, I have no experience in this, but I think. And so this was a very kind of different context. Of course, I didn't start off saying, well, you know, space is about being deeply human. That's not the group of people that we collected, right? These were all space symposium participants. And so in a way, we were serving space actors in this particular one. But it's also important for the foundation in terms of bringing in non-space actors as well, and also the general public. So we're going to be serving different parties differently. And what might help you and your listeners kind of understand that is, you know, when we think about the strategic pillars of the foundation and what we're going to be doing, we're going to have our eye on three things. And this is not to say these are the only three things we're going to do, but these are three things that we want to get really good at. One being multi-stakeholder collaboration. One being integrative research, and the third being public connection. So as you can imagine, as we do these three different types of work, streams of work, we're going to be approaching it differently.
So how did it go over at the Space Symposium? Because this is the first time you've launched it, correct?
Yes. We had amazing reception. So as I mentioned to you, we really created this environment. In some sense, I mean, we planned well for it. We also, at the same time, didn't know what to expect, right? We didn't know what to expect, and that also made it very exciting as well. And so what we ended up seeing was that we got to a really much deeper level of conversation, and that was one of the things that our participants said that they wanted, was to just get beyond the surface-level conversation. And we managed to get that. It was informal, it was working, and it was a dialogue. And how do we get this to happen? First, we kept it very intimate. We sat in a semicircle. We had rules of engagement that created a safe environment to speak. We had people there that were very well aware of these rules and that were committed to ensuring the type of environment we wanted to create. We also, of course, shared a set of questions that we were very interested in talking about, so they already kind of knew what they were coming in for. And then we also, you know, we specifically asked people to speak from their personal perspective, not from their organizational perspective. So to make this very concrete, because we're all of the people that Jose mentioned that are involved in this, we like to keep it real. and as you know, at the Space Symposium, you know, we wear these huge badges on the front with our organization, our position. You know, as people checked in to our little humble event, we actually asked them to remove their name tags or to move these big badges, and we had them stick a label on their blazers and just to write whatever name they wanted to be called by. And that's the way people saw each other, you know. They didn't come in knowing who was going to be there. They probably walked out, many of them not even knowing, you know, what organizations they worked for or at what hierarchy, and that was very important for us. So for people to come at it from a very personal perspective. And then we said, you know, it's okay to have hypotheses. We want to hear your hypotheses. You don't already need to know. Put it out there. Let's dialogue on it. Let's figure out later how to test these hypotheses. But let's actually have a conversation that we should be having here that you can't have anywhere else. And also, you know, Jose's a highly skilled facilitator given the complex military situations he's been in, and he doesn't let anyone off the hook. So you happen to come across anyone that might admit they were there or something, they will definitely attest to that. And so that allowed us to get deep really, really quickly. But because, you know, their busy schedules at the symposium, it was not a very long event. The people who did show up and made time for it were the ones who were interested in diving into the sticky mechanics of the space industry and into the future principles of space. And they were interested in going beyond, as I mentioned before, the surface of a conversation. And what came out of it is, during this dialogue, one thing was very clear to all of us, that some words, you know, when we talk and when we dialogue, some words carry baggage. Like, let me think of some of the ones that came up. Dependency, development, covert. That was a very charged word as well. We started using it. And then, you know, I'm so proud that the individuals in the room felt comfortable enough to say, hey, wait a second, that word is loaded. Maybe we should talk about it at some point. David, we really need to explore what this is about. Not in terms of just these words, but what's the baggage, actually? What are the human relationships that make these words loaded? You know, we talk about relationships being, you know, having baggage in a relationship. It's the same thing here. So, and we really need to explore that. And that means that, you know, afterwards we then need to have some clear definitions. And, for example, you know, what's commercial space? What's not commercial space? What's space development? Really such fundamental things. In some ways, I was a bit surprised some of these definitional issues came up. And at the same time, being a researcher where we're all about concepts, developing new concepts, clarifying, refining concepts, it also wasn't surprising at the end of the day, you know. And we have to do all of this before we can even think about collaborating in any kind of lasting way and to have it be more than just rhetoric and talk. So our team is very happy with how it went. We got great feedback. The participants were left wanting more, which means that I think we're doing it right and that we're serving the space domain in a critical way.
Did you plan follow-up events? How do you follow something like this up?
David, great question. Jose's laughing next to me. I don't know if you can hear it. But
yeah, no, I do hear him laughing.
And then he told me good luck. I don't know what that's about.
but he has a good sense of humor, so his laughter may not mean anything. So
that's an excellent question, actually. You know, we kind of thought, okay, this is going to be the first event. We call it IWD number one. We already have some plans for IWD number two, which will be held in Europe in the fall. And we weren't thinking too much about in between. And it was just very clear after this. We're like, well, we need to start developing white paper, start figuring out what's a set of words and terms that are really fundamental to not just the space domain, but how the space domain operates. What are these critical words? And then how do we start to understand how it's being used in different sectors and in different countries? And then, of course, for us, logistically speaking, how do we pull all that information together? And then how do we synthesize it ourselves as a team and then start to distribute it publicly so that other people can get engaged as well? So that's what's in the works for the next coming weeks.
Okay, so Alan is in San Antonio, Texas, and he says, since you're talking about charged words, the space settlement interest groups continually refer to space settlements as colonization. I can't think of any more of a charged word than colonization, but the industry doesn't seem to want to let go of it, at least not on a wide-scale basis. Changing behavior seems to be more difficult than maybe some of the technical challenges. So when you have a clearly word that is used like colonization, which has enormous baggage to it, and you can't move away from it, what does that tell you? Are you doing something wrong? Are the people in the industry so close-minded that they can't detect or see the baggage even when it's put in front of them, or do they just simply don't care?
That, Alan, thank you so much for that question. We can actually talk about it forever. You know, coming from, I'm actually going to hand this over to Jose because for this question. But before I do that, I just want to mention, so when Kelsey first mentioned space to me and Jose's idea. One of the first things you mentioned was Christopher Columbus, and I thought, what? What? And once I started talking to Jose about it, I started to get it. I started to get understand what that was about. Which is why I'm going to hand it off to him. Second point I want to make is just in terms of human dynamics, I like to think that when we get a reaction from people, it probably means we're hitting an important button. And when we're at that point is where we can start to have very deep conversations. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Jose.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Hey, David, I intend to be quick because I want to get Tochan to continue to talk. She's amazing.
Okay.
I can't tell your audience enough. I want to do two things. One, paint you a picture of what this room looked like. First of all the invites were done directly to individuals that didn't even know who we were. So it wasn't a gathering of our friends. It were people that had no idea who the Kalos was, Kalos Foundation. Do you go look for a Kalos Foundation on a website? You're not going to find it because we're still establishing. We're making sure that we have it right. So in the room, for those who, there were about 60 invites. And about half, we ended up at about a half or something like that. But in that room, the power in that room was unbelievable. You had senior leaders in the space industry, senior military-type leaders in the space industry from all over the world, and then you had people who had never even thought about space but are participating in the symposium because of their relationships. And then you have people who worked on economic development. So you can imagine, oh, and by the way, they were from different foreign, so it wasn't a U.S. show. I want to make that absolutely clear. So the power of that, I cannot tell you how Tochan did all that work that it takes to get somebody that doesn't even know you to sit in a room. I don't know what else I can show to do that, to show you all in the audience of how strong and how willed and how charismatic Tochan is. But to add to it, to answer to your question, so the charge words, it actually went back to the very origins of community in space. It was a charged word that got me started on community in space, and it was colonization. What I found, and I'll be very, very blunt to all you colonization guys out there, when you're not thinking about the words you're using, then most of those organizations are looking out for themselves. It is not, if they are not looking for the interests of themselves. And here's why. Because fundamentally, when you're looking at exploration and being able to put together a community, which is where we come from, setting up a community, you got to have a framework for the community before you talk technology, laws, rules, or anything like that. And except for one case around the world, one case that had a framework, it didn't match ours, the way we see community. But they made a really good attempt, and they were very careful of the words they use to not offend someone else in another part of the world that would see it different. And what they went with was community in a shared environment. I won't name who that was. But everywhere else we've looked at, it becomes like he said, a colonization issue that is about putting the settlement, putting the flag down, and getting the authority of men on the moon or wherever it is. And what we always go, there's life, there's machines, there's the value of all of those. How do they get respected in that community? And they go, what? Huh? So to share with it, at fundamentals, usually what we've seen is when those organizations start out, they have very heavy wording that is probably not appropriate. And then over time, they either fix or they disappear, because then people get offended by those words, and they go, this is not going to work. And that's why there's a scar tissue in the industry when you put foundations and ideas about colonization of space, that you don't get the traction, because then words matter. And for Kayla's Foundation, having Tochan, she's educated all of us on being very careful with that. So you can imagine, you think I'm not off the hook. She won't let me or anybody off the hook about how we describe community in space. So I hope I answered that question from the audience, and I'm going to give it back to Tochan.
Okay, thank you.
I'm back.
what are your future plans, what is your thinking about going forward with the foundation and the partners?
So I think for the foundation, so the way that I like to think about it, I like to keep it simple. My promoter for my PhD always likes to say things are nice when they come in threes. So as I mentioned to you, we're really focused on the multi-stakeholder collaboration, research dissemination, and also public connection. So moving forward, as we think about these three different things, I think about really, for now, I would say I'm the only kind of peer foundation person. Some of the other partners involved, like Jose, also have kids, partners, and things going on. But I really think about how do we do this, and how do we do it in a very, when I say I like to use strategic, but at the same time, I know that word's very charged. Strategic in the sense that we want to get very good at it, as I mentioned before, and how can we do it differently, and differently meaning that we are complementing the people who are doing a phenomenal job at each of these three things. And we've begun to start to talk to some of them between Europe, Asia, the U.S., and it becomes really exciting. And at the same time, you know, it helps us to figure out our identity as well, because it's not about, this is not meant to be a self-indulgent project. I think we want to be really careful about that. And we want to make sure that it stays grounded. It stays connected. We can't be talking about being a driver of multi-stakeholder collaboration when we're not collaborating deeply ourselves. And so this is going to mean making sure that we know who's out there that's doing work that's very well aligned with our mission and with our values, figuring out with them, you know, how can we complement each other, where can we develop complementary skill sets, where can we start to divide up some of the work. Can we also co-plan and joint plan a lot of these things? So those are things that are on top of my mind as we start to build up the foundation, get our 501c3 status, and some of those other practical logistical things at the same time, is figuring out how do we really get good at this stuff and where do we fit in with the people that are already doing these things very well.
Randy is in Tucson, Arizona, and he says, I'm also at work, David. He says, do you have an outrage campaign in progress that includes education? And if so, what grades are you targeting? But also, there are lots of space conferences. I attend several during the year. Some of them are more professional, like AIAA. Others are more advocate-oriented, like the New Space Conference with the Space Frontier Foundation or the Mars Society Conference. Do you plan on presenting or being part of various space conferences, including the professional ones as well as the advocate ones? And again, are you doing any educational outreach into what grades?
Yeah, that's a great question. So firstly, yes, we want to be present. We are starting to be present. And of course, as Jose mentioned before, we're calling you for here from the Space Symposium, or right after the conclusion of the Space Symposium. Our next big event, we do plan to be at the Unispace Celebration in Vienna, so that's very exciting, coming up in a couple months. And then we will also, I'm an academic at heart, so we are going to be at the academic conferences, and we're planning to be at the IAC in Bremen in the fall, as I mentioned before. So, yes, we are going to be present. We will be presenting. We are hoping that our paper on community and space gets accepted to the IAC, so we will be presenting there for those who will be joining, hopefully. But we should hear about that soon. And in terms of education, okay, so this is a very interesting question, because there are organizations out there, as some people have pointed out, that are doing things related to space education. Now, the difference with what we are doing in some sense is that, we don't want to just duplicate the work or build on the work necessarily, but we really want to create a focus. And we may grow out from there and start to do some more similar work. But what we want to do in terms of the general public and public connection and public engagement is actually to focus on engaging the general public in opportunities to shape or develop the space domain in terms of making specific actions. So in that sense, we're not going to, at least in the beginning stages, really look at advocating education and doing things more generally speaking in that area, which other organizations and nonprofits are doing a great job with. But more, how can we create opportunities to to meaningfully connect space opportunities to people's everyday conditions or activities. One example that I always like to refer to, which Jose actually came up with, was, you know, he said one day, wouldn't it be amazing if one day everybody wanted to vote on space policy? And so this is the kind of connection and action that we want to create. And so we really have our eye on that. So what this means is that our main campaign right now, in terms of public connection, public engagement, which, you know, it's not actually public, although now I guess it is since I'm on the radio, is that we want to have technology awareness campaigns that really bring applications of space technologies, into products that are being used in our everyday lives. And it does not actually have to be products. It could also be services as well, but things that touch us every day. And so we're in the process of planning that campaign for this coming year. And then we hope to launch that at the, you know, around the time of the 50th anniversary of the moon landing next summer. And so our idea is to actually every year have a campaign that's associated with a different type of industry that touches people's everyday lives, and to really highlight and create the collaboration in that industry that so that people can start to really integrate that.
Well, I'm getting dragged in from a listener's question. They're coming after me with this one. So I'm going to – one or both of you may want to respond to this. Helen is in Portland, Oregon, and she says, I don't know if you pay attention to the visionary statements that David uses when he starts the second segment of the program. But he tends to have a recording that talks about how space is for everyone and everyone's life is going to be improved, and maybe he's even flirting with kumbaya here and there. My question is, if you wanted to take this message to Africa and talk about how space affects people in their daily lives, this might be a challenge. I remember a few years ago, David had a UCLA student on the show who had just spent the summer on a program with Stanford students doing AIDS discussions and awareness in a little town in Tanzania. And David interviewed her. She was a good friend of his family. And he asked if she ever met anyone who wanted to think of dreaming to be an astronaut, for example. And she started laughing and said, these people don't even know they're on the continent of Africa. So how do you connect space to so many millions of people in the world that don't even know where they are?
That's an excellent question. I know Jose's jumping out of his seat. We can let him talk first.
Go ahead. Okay, I got it. Sorry, we're passing the phone to the audience as we go. So for Helen out in Portland, hope you're having a good day. And second, if you think Africa is difficult, South America is even more challenging. And if you were thinking that South America is more challenging, think of South Asia, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Bangladesh, some of the lower GDP index countries on the planet. We did a test on this. As a matter of fact, I did this back in the fall, and and what I found that connected us to those individuals that fundamentally have so many much bigger issues than space. Whether I'm going to eat, whether I'm going to live, where am I at? Where I'm trying, you know, I'm trying to learn how to, I can get a job. Never mind worried about space. So what we found, and I share this openly because if it helps anybody else in their line of work, God bless you, keep it going, is discussing the unknown first. So in other words, you are not going to have a space discussion with somebody that doesn't even understand space. What human interaction understands are things about the unknown. If you were going into the unknown, And that carries in a conversation as everything from how are you going to eat tomorrow, how do you take care of yourself. Those conversations end up being the precursor to grow into space. So what the Kalis Foundation and what TOTRAN's done that opened my eyes in such a short period of time is that is the human dimension of how they perceive life that will allow us to understand how much of space you can connect to them. That's the important part. Everybody gets hung. Again, this goes back to what I said in the last half. We do an awesome job inspiring and getting imagination to work. But we do a terrible job in the industry, and as well in terms of media and in terms of all these things, at getting them to decision points, to help them understand that the decision of the unknown they do right in their own living today deals with some of the very things going into the unknown in space. For me personally, was number of years fighting in combat, where I didn't know where I was going to go. The area is ungoverned. Someone may or may not be out to get me. I will have some allies. I will have some relationships. I will have to make some money if I'm living there. You know, I have to make some sort of, I got to bring some value to the village I'm in, even if I'm a soldier, so that I don't get shot. So that is the inspiration for me, and I only share this on a personal level with you, Helen, because that's what it meant for me. And when I'm able to talk to someone and they don't get space and they're not there, where I draw to is the basic principles, ungoverned area. Yeah, a lot of different actors and players, not a lot of rules on the ground. Trying to see how you get a quality of life that's worthwhile. Trying to figure out how to get there. And unfortunately, a lot of our visionaries focus on 15 galaxies away when, like you said, Helen, some people don't even know they're in the same continent. And some people culturally are very happy where they're at, and they don't even want to talk about space. So why are you bothering me with this? So it takes the answer to your question is it takes a level of connection and development about the unknown to get them on board. And I hope that answers your question. Again, it's not altruistic. Not everybody's going to get it. But those that do usually start even further back. And I hope that answers your question.
Are you familiar with I'm sure you're familiar with the overview effect, right?
The overview, the what?
The overview effect.
Yes.
So I was a big proponent. I guess I still am a big proponent of it. And I used to say if there was any reason why government would ever want to keep individuals and people out of space, it would be because of the power of the overview effect spreading throughout the population, because it would sort of counter a lot of governments that want to control people.
David, like I said, I want to get this back to Toe Tran, but you're absolutely right. Because that, again, there is a balance. This is not this is not social media getting everybody to vote in an equal share. No, it is simply the awareness of it. And just like Earth, there are going to be some who are represented by a particular country and entity. Some are going to be represented by the brand of the company they work for or the company they support. And some will be simply connected by imagination and inspiration. But the point we're trying to make about community and space is that at least everybody's aware that there is a framework in which when people want to talk about this thing called space, there's a framework to connect to it from Earth. And I know that sounds like really puffy cloud stuff, but you have no idea, just like it was in that IWD, the effect that has on very big senior leaders on how they're going to lead their organizations in space is actually very, very powerful. I wish, you know, because of disclosures and many, many things we put to be able to hold that event together, there were a lot of non-attribution Chatham House rules, things that we had to put together to even let that happen. That is not an easy task to do, and Toe Tran walked through that perfectly with some of our partners to make sure we could do this legally. But yes, that's the challenge we have. And again, a lot of kudos to Toe Tran on that. So let me give it back to her.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to... So, Helen, I also want to, you know, thank again for that question. I definitely want to get it connected to you, so I'm really happy you brought up Africa. And so please, David, I hope you can make that happen for us. I'm not going to, you know, repeat some of the excellent points that Jose mentioned, but rather I do want to share an alternative reality that kind of comes from the different areas that I've exposed myself to and studied in terms of doing research. So I have also, you know, a background in international development as well. So during the research I did, I want to share a couple of comments in relation to Helen's question. So I hope they're not too vague, but I do want to keep them short. So one of the things I mentioned before, I said let's not make sure that this is not a self-indulgent project. So what I mean by this. So during my doctoral research, I observed the difference between a Western company coming to a former township in Africa to collaborate with a nonprofit, sort of an entrepreneurial hub that would generate jobs and, you know, save the community. And this fell apart for many reasons. A lot of it having to do with non-understanding of their daily lives. In some sense, you know, Helen, some of the things that you mentioned are very, very important to have that understanding and to not come in thinking we're gonna, you know, just save the world without really doing it hand in hand with the people that are involved in very deep ways. So that deep understanding is very important. Second point I want to make is that we should also be reflective about what kind of image of Africa we're working off of and the assumptions about what is important in their lives and what they are struggling with. So even if we are there and we have certain experiences or we hear certain stories or are able to talk to people, these are also individual perspectives as well, no different than our individual perspectives and how, you know, we also do not want to be generalized as well. So our understanding of Africa, you know, it's limited by what we have been exposed to and what we have also chosen to be exposed to. So that was just also a point that I want to make as well, because I also think there has been a lot of development there, also space agencies that are starting up in Africa that I'm really looking forward to looking into. I have to say it was a reflection for myself as well that, you know, I caught myself being surprised hearing about that. And so that also said something to me about what I've been exposed to. So I'm really looking forward to really engaging and learning more about space in different pockets of the world, in different corners of the world.
Since you come to all of this from way beyond in another galaxy that wasn't space related, so to speak. If you took on a job title at Kalius, and I'm not sure what it would be, but for the sake of argument, let's call it recruitment for new minds. And you were running the recruitment for new minds division. How would you go about it?
Recruitment for new minds. No, that's a good question. You mean in order to get talent to the organization?
Well, I'm going deeper than talent. I'm going to how do you recruit new minds to it's a little trite, but to put it in quotes, get it.
Oh, I see. you know. For now, where my thinking is, and this kind of goes back to your question before about how I connect with space, and so I kind of start there. I kind of think about my own journey and sort of what little space was to me before I started getting connected, and then, you know, continuing to kind of develop this running list in my mind about, you know, how space is really about being human. And one kind of some of the other things I've been on that list that, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about before is that, you know, it's also an opportunity for human progress, self-actualization, for social economic prosperity, also for, if we want to get a bit extreme, you know, also survival of the human race in some circles. And then also at the same time, you know, it plays out in terms of nation-state competition and things like that. So I think there are also these other areas that are also very practical and have very consequential results in terms of the way that we operate as a society, especially also in terms of some of the economic issues that Jose mentioned as well. I think through some of those, I mean, there's so many different kinds of messages and angles to all of this when I say that space is deeply about being human, that I think what I would focus on is really kind of customizing that first by really understanding who I'm speaking to, who is this party, what is really their interest, what is their mode of operation, and then how can I connect to that. And I hope to really have a kind of a set of ways to do that.
Is there any group you would, off the top of your head, not want to speak to?
Not want to speak to.
Uh-huh.
I'm not jaded yet. I hope not to be jaded.
Would you go into a prison and speak to prisoners?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, no. I really...
They have a sector of the community.
No, David, let me hand it over to
Jose, he wants to jump on your term.
No, there's no way I could have sat on that one. The best challenges, and whether I was deployed or here, is the very people where you have differences in perceptions against where the society has already made a preconceived notion of where they're going. So, you know, if you took a look at prisoners, yes, they made a mistake, but there's a preconceived that if you're a con, you must have done something wrong. And therefore, you know, and there's a stigmatized both publicly and privately about what people think of somebody who goes to prison. And for that same matter, anybody who's very wealthy and very rich, in the case of somebody very poor and unfortunate with the way they made those tough decisions that got them in trouble, this is the essence of the space, the community in space, trying to recognize that it is about decision making, and it is about decision making into the unknown, into what happens next. And that's what we focus on. So, you know, again, Totran is the recruiting executive director, and I'm the guy on the ground, trying to work it out. But our approach would be very, very similar, because at the end, it's respecting the opportunity of that individual to make a decision. I mean, well, let us not remember that we made an entire continent in Australia based on people who were perceived in England who were considered prisoners and rejects of that state. And last I remember, Australia's doing quite fine with an Australian space agency and doing incredible work in defense, particular for those of you that know exactly what they do. Absolutely, David.
Absolutely. We're coming up on the end of the show, so I wanted to give each of you a chance to sort of conclude and summarize. Jose, since you're on the line, do you want to go first, or do you want to pass it over to Totran?
I'm sorry, say that again?
I want to give each of you a chance to offer concluding comments.
Absolutely.
Do you want to...
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, hang up and...
We lost Totran for some
reason. No, you have her. She's right here next to me. I'll give my last remarks. I'll pass the phone to her.
Okay.
For us, the first thing we want to share with you is that we have a website. If you want to participate either in Kalis Partners in what we do, and especially in Kalis Foundation, you can reach through Kalis Partners for now. We're going to establish the link fairly shortly here that you can reach the foundation. Please reach out to David. David has been... It is part of the family for us. We talk to him regularly because we respect what he does in the industry. And as most of you know, David and I have very similar values. We look very different, but we have very similar values to how we see space. And we enjoy sharing here with all of you this. It's not altruistic, but we do our very best to get the most out of the situation. So please connect with us. If you're in the investing side, we're always available to you. If you're on the entrepreneur side, we're available to you as well, and we cover anywhere on the planet. You'll be surprised where we end up at times in some business deals. Totran, to you.
Hi, David.
Hi.
I do want to touch on very quickly the prison comment. It really got us charged. It got both of us charged, Africa and prison. So for me personally, you know, I had a professor at Durham Business School who's done a phenomenal job, Greg Fairchild, to bring entrepreneurship and business studies to that institution in Virginia as a way to do community and economic development. And, you know, seeing that has really opened up my eyes and made me reflective about my assumptions about the institution, same thing that I also said about Africa. So it kind of leads me to what I would like to leave with your listeners is that, you know, end of day, it's about learning to observe. Learning to observe the world differently, learning to observe our interactions with other people differently, and then therefore learning to recognize our own assumptions. And I'm speaking in very general terms, even though I'm on this call for Kalis Foundation, but at the end of the day, this is really what it's about, and this is what we want to refine and get good at as a foundation, and to also bring it not just a space domain, but to also bring these kinds of techniques in a more a broader audience as well. Thank you. I just want to say thank you, David, and thank you to the listeners, and I truly look forward to connecting with some of your listeners. So please send them my way, send them Jose's way.
Thank you, and to both Jose and to Totran, thank you very much for being with us. Listeners, we also thank you for your emails and for being here, too. Please comment on the blog and share your thoughts. I'll make sure both of our guests see your comments. and they can respond on the blog or individually to you. And we do have open lines on Sunday, and come back, you know, for that discussion. And there's a couple of announcements that I'll make on that show too. So again, I certainly want to thank Jose. I certainly want to thank Totron. Everybody, we have a great weekend coming up. It's beautiful in California. I hope wherever you are, it is also equally nice. And if you're on the East Coast, I hope the snow is leaving, but I don't know that for sure. But we really do thank our guest today for being with us, and for all of you who participated. Do keep the weekend safe, and as always, keep looking up. Goodbye from Jose, from Totron, from David, and the Space Show.